Welcome to Reinventions in Between, your go-to podcast for real stories of reinvention that happen between life stages, career changes, and living abroad. I'm Sara Coggiola, life coach, intercultural trainer, and reinventions facilitator, helping people on their quest to what's next. I have reinvented myself a few times, and in the past 16 years, I have collected fascinating stories of change. In each episode, my guests will talk about why and how they took the leap and seized the opportunity to change their life. Let's begin.
And that was a big part of what happened. And I was 19 then. So that was my moment of, I knew this is what I was meant to be doing. But I found out about art psychotherapy about 10 years later. And that was my eureka moment of, that's it, that's what I'm doing.
Today, I'm sitting with Shelley Burrows, a clinical trauma specialist and art psychotherapist who is trained and registered in both Canada and the UK. She has 20 years of experience in providing individual therapy for children, teenagers, and parental consultation. Her areas of specialization include trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder in children and teenagers, cross-culture and third-culture kids therapy sessions, and international adoptee family consultation. Welcome, Shelley. I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Likewise, it's lovely to be here, Sarah. Thank you.
I'd like to start with a sentence that you wrote and start with it and see how it works, what triggers you. So you wrote, if I had known that just over a year after leaving my international school in Malaysia, that I would be presenting my art therapy experience with Daniela and Ruth in Rome, at the International Association for Counseling Conference, I would have known that taking that scary step into the unknown was worth it.
Yes, that's an understatement. When I returned to the UK, I went through that whole process of watching my husband get a job and re-engage outside, and my children going to school and re-engaging outside, and me being left at home cleaning the bathroom and thinking, what have I done? I just remember thinking, what have I done and why have I done it? And of course, when you're cleaning things, some people find that therapeutic. I don't. And I just felt that I was in a very sort of dark place where I couldn't see the other side of it. And that was what came from the next step of my process. And yes, that was a huge, huge step in my life, and one that I was very, very lucky to have.
Wow, a very powerful and reflection for sure. So my question today is just starting. So how did you come up with this reinvention idea?
Well, I did train initially as a graphic designer stroke illustration. So the illustration course that I was on, it couldn't make its mind up what it was. This was over 20 years ago. So everybody was a bit of one and a bit of the other, which is very third culture, if I'm honest. But then when I found out about art psychotherapy, I thought, that's it, because my school didn't offer psychology as a subject because it wasn't a proper subject. So I was left with this interest, what can I do with it? And then, of course, art was the one thing, one thread throughout my life that has always linked everything together. So that was where I reached, where I realized that there is the art psychotherapist part of me, there is the clinician part of me, and then there is the graphic designer stroke, well, more illustrator, I would say, part of me, which was dormant for a long time. It was like I kind of put it in a cupboard, but I knew it was still there, if that makes sense.
That's very interesting to analyze about ourselves, and not always happen so easily to understand which are the path that we can choose. It's not always easy, right? So no. What challenged you at most at first, or during this transition, or you went?
Not having a working identity when I had a clear identity as part of an international school community. So we returned to where we had lived before, but it wasn't the same. And I think it's very easy to think, oh, I'm just going back. But it wasn't the same and we weren't the same. So it was going back and everything was different. That was really, really difficult, because where my kids were in comparison to other children, their relationships with their friends had kind of changed. My husband's had a new job, and I'm there thinking, well, my daughter's not at the same school. I don't see mum's at the school gate anymore because she's old enough to go by herself. So there was just this gap where staying at home, cleaning things. I'm not an obsessive cleaner. The house had a major mold problem, which I think really did make things more difficult because it was just a practical issue. But it was also that I had lost myself, and mm-hmm. I didn't know where things were going to lead next. So winter in the UK, it's dark, it's gloomy, it's people don't really go out. Admittedly, this was all pre-COVID, but even then it was just, I felt that I was in a very small, dark, damp box.
So it was the circumstances. You had two major events at the same time. So moving to a different country and having your job in standby for a while. Yeah. So it was a huge adaptation, probably. One of the major patterns that I see in hearing other people on reinvention stories is really this one. So the challenges and how difficult can be to be able to do the same work, same job in a different country. Yes. And not just because of the job market, but also because of the title recognition. And I know this has been a problem for you as well.
Yes, very much so. And I've always come full circle now, where I've been in Canada for several months now. My registration is an ongoing process, but then I'm in that kind of limbo again, where it's just that keeping going while keeping trying, if that makes sense, which is very hard when you've had a sort of bad week. But also it's that investment in our move here for my children, because we have dual nationality. We're very, very lucky to be British Canadian, and it's just making sure that we give this everything that we've got. But it's a bit like when you have children, when you have babies, you forget. You forget, and then you have more children. It's just that you go back to that space and you think, I'm doing this again. But then what is there at the end of it? So I'm kind of gone all the way back round. And now it's just that recognizing where I am again. But then it's not about panicking, because if I keep going, I know that something will come from it.
Absolutely. So I see honoring values of worth and coherence in these. Your persistence and your being loyal to what you have studied and what you believe in, despite the challenges, and you're still committed to find a job and be able to serve all the community and all the people who needs this type of therapy, and which is embedded with something that you truly love. So drawing, I've been fortunate to attend one of your workshops during FIGT conference in Bangkok, and I was so delighted to be there in that space, drawing the island and putting every element inside. Do you want to share about this experience, or this is part of your work?
Well, the island was interesting, because that came about it was a social group at the school that I was at, where we had these children that nobody really quite knew what to do with them. And everybody has these students. You know, they're not the very, very high risk. They're not the ones where people have enormous concerns, but people are concerned enough to kind of, let's have a social group with some therapeutic art activity. So it's very clear that it wasn't art therapy or art psychotherapy. But the island came about where we had a number of children who basically didn't like each other, I think would be the nicest way I could put it. And they just argued about everything. So what I did was I had a huge piece of paper and I drew the outline of the island and said, right, it's your island, fill in what you want to put in it. And it changed the dynamics because we did it over 3 weeks during the 12-week term. So one at the start, one in the middle, and one at the end. And at the start, there were children drawing their own little islands off the islands with sharks swimming around it and no one's allowed there. And these were children that had very, very low self-esteem and very few friends. And then by the end, they were all joining them all together with bridges. So you could actually see the development of the social relationships with these children. And a lot of them, I think there were only two girls in the group of eight, but particularly between the boys, you could see this linking up process happening in the groups as well as on the paper. And that's why we stuck with it, because every group that we had, whether social or therapeutic art, the two were kind of together in my school. And we really saw that with every single group, whether they were 8 or 12 or 14, we saw the similar things going all the way through, which is why it interests me so much. And it's what children need. And interestingly, with TCKs, the airport was usually drawn first. But I think I wish I'd taken note of with which group, but it was always the airport and then everything else. So it was fascinating. Always like drawing planes and airports. We realised that quite early on. So, yeah, it was really enjoyable to do it as well and fun, and they relaxed.
Amazing. I can really perceive all the passion that comes out from you telling and describing all this evolution. And it's important, definitely. I still remember during a conversation how for many TCK, going back home wasn't a specific country, but for them was similarly to the airport, was the courtyard of the high school, where they spend most of their good time with their friends. And it's probably where most of their memories come from. Very interesting. One of the other elements that comes often to people who reinvent themselves because of a move to a different country is the opportunity that comes out because living afar or in a different country. This was your case, right? You were talking about your experience at Malaysian International School was very important for you. Mm-hmm. Very busy time of your life.
Yes, extremely. But it was something that I realized at the time. It was 10 years worth of clinical experience in 4 years.
Wow.
I would have to say. And it was also operating within a different wider system. So in the UK, I know how the system works. I know what you need to do to try and get the help you need, but how it all links together, I had an understanding. The Malaysian system, I did not. It's very, very different. And then it's culturally very different. So you had to learn fast. But what I did learn made me realize that however much I might have liked to think that I didn't have a filter, you always have a filter. And I just remember, you know, a few things that I said and did where I thought, oh, you know, I'm not going to make any cultural mistakes here. And of course, you always end up doing it, don't you? And you think, oh, no. But it was just that I will always have a filter. And that was what really, really stuck with me. And I had a lot of students that were really quite happy to tell me how they felt about the expat staff population. And the expectation of that expat staff population in comparison to the local staff population. And with many of these students, I'd seen them so frequently over such a long period of time that it was really interesting that they felt comfortable telling me, you know, about these comparisons within the school communities, which I might not have noticed all of them. Some were very obvious. Others were very subtle. But I felt very, very privileged to have access to that information. And of course, there were things that hadn't even entered my consciousness, which was really, really good to find out.
Yes. Because also, of course, it's you build a lot of work around trust, and depending on the age of the kids, of course, if they are younger, they are just themselves and they don't think about all this construction of relationship. But if they are a little bit older, very important. And this brings me to ask you, what was the strengths, skills, or competencies that you used when you embarked on the change?
My training, my graphic design illustration training, it was so obsessively detailed, particularly with graphic design, where this font had to be this way. And, you know, the tiniest thing, if you made an error, you know, everyone would put their work up and then the tutor would stand up and go through it and walk straight up, point mistake. It was like living in a house full of white furniture with somebody who could spot a mark from a mile away. That's what my course felt like, which is why by the end I'd had enough of the graphic design part. But it taught me attention to detail. But it also taught me when you don't need detail, when too much detail is counterproductive. The illustration side of my course was fun. It was play with the materials. You didn't get that in graphic design very often, but it was far more enjoyable. You could make a mess. People, you know, all sorts of things came out because it was more like play. And I think that's where I realized the play aspect of it. But also, if you're an art psychotherapist, it's not about judging what the image looks like. It's what it represents internally. And I did have a parent send her daughter specifically to me. She called me the art lady. This was when I was the school counselor. And the child went home and talked to her mum. And the mum was not happy because I did not teach her daughter how to paint kittens properly. So she had thought it was a painting lesson in which you chose your topic, and I had to explain that it wasn't. But when I see people sit down and they're comfortable with the process, most people are not at the start. They're quite awkward, or I'm not good at art, or I failed. Younger children less so. They just, yay, let's play with the paint. But as people get older, I see more anxiety and reluctance. Once you get through that, and that everything you create is important, then you see the difference. But for me personally, the graphic design part took all the fun and play out of all of it completely, but the illustration kind of gave it back. And then it just sat in its cupboard waiting.
I see. So this highlights also the importance of considering all our skills and experiences that we collect through our life. And I also talk, and part of the webinar that I offer to people who want to reinvent themselves is really focus and learn how to consider all the skills that they have acquired and to be able to use them in different experiences, different job opportunities, different projects. Might be also not a specific job, but having a project in building something, a network or a partnership or whatever it is. And transferable skills are very important also, because many people who have fear of starting something new or change their life, they think they have to start from scratch, from zero, and wipe out everything that have been throughout their life. But this is not the case. And what I like to highlight in this is also very powerful combination of a creative process connected to the inner work.
Yes.
Which comes out beautifully with your experience, because many people forget about the creative aspect of our life, and we never enjoy, we never find ourselves into drawing, painting, or even doing something for the house and just enjoying it. And the But for you is even in a step further, because what you're doing is you're using creativity to heal, right?
Yes. And it's almost like when you see sort of two bits joining, it's almost like you've tied something together. And a lot of the people that I work with, particularly those who are not used to having a voice, you could see it, you could own it, you had ownership. If it's all doing this in your head where there's too much, we would use the whiteboards in the counseling room, put it all on there, and then it stops moving. Mm-hmm. So I found that having that ownership was really helpful, but also feeling comfortable in showing my clients how it worked for me was also really helpful, because sometimes students or clients would say to me, well, I can't draw. I can't draw. I bet you were really good at art. And I said, but it's not about drawing being good. It's basically, this is how it works. And I'll show you. The vast, vast majority of people that I've worked with have started to see that creative side of them and link them together. But interestingly, that's how that started. I was an art teacher on a summer camp in America when I was 19. The vast majority of children on that camp were from very disadvantaged backgrounds, Harlem and the Bronx being two of them. But what they did in the art process, it wasn't simply about going to the art block to, I don't know, paint pictures of fruit in bowls or to make lanyard bracelets, because they were obsessed with these lanyard bracelets. It was basically me saying to them, right, draw me a picture of your family. Draw me a picture of something that you've told me about. A lot of them had incarcerated family members. Mm. So would draw pictures of their family members in prison. A lot of them had jewelry with real significance, and these stories, these processes through these young people's lives. I was absolutely astounded. And then when the camp director kind of called me in for a chat, I'm thinking, oh, okay, you know, I've really enjoyed my job. It's been really interesting. The kids are great. And he just said, we like what you're doing, but could you kind of make it a bit less personal, is what he said. But I realized then that I was doing what I was always meant to do, because A, I thoroughly enjoyed it. B, the kids got an opportunity to show that part of themselves, but also to take it with them when they left. A lot of them didn't have art materials or access to, you know, anything. So we would make up materials for them to take home with them, but also that they could show people and not be judged. And that was a big part of what happened. And I was 19 then. So that was my moment of, I knew this is what I was meant to be doing. But I found out about art psychotherapy about 10 years later. And that was my eureka moment of, that's it, that's what I'm doing. Okay. So I was very happy that day.
And that fascinates me, because most of the time, yes, we don't pay attention to what we're doing at a very young age. But actually, that was a truly call. It was a sign that you were on your path. And then it takes time to become what it needs to become. We need to collect experiences. We need to do that journey. It's not just that we study and then the following day we sign a contract for a job and we get hired and we go to the office. It's not that simple, not for everyone.
No.
And it's really, once we accept these, I think that it becomes even a more important process for ourselves, just sort of a call on becoming who we are meant to be, and to do what we are called to be doing. And it's not strange that nowadays there are all these books about finding the true passion or finding your ikigai. Because in the end, if we have lived for many years doing something that was supposed to be the perfect thing, now there's a more awareness of what we are capable of doing that is meaningful, just not just for ourselves, but also for the community and the well-being of others. So it becomes a more holistic way of interacting with the world. And I love it. It's simply fascinating. There's another question that I wanted to ask you about networking, mutual support, co-creation, which we mentioned a little bit at the beginning when I read the sentence. You were working with Ruth and I remember the name.
Daniela.
So you met these two people through FIGT, Families in Global Transition. What this meant to you in your path?
It made a huge difference. I mean, when I told you about me, cleaning the mold off the walls in my bathroom in England, I'm doing this. It was so awful. And then I found out about FIGT when I was working in Malaysia. Ellen Mahoney visited our school and she's like, you've got to go to FIGT. It's amazing. And of course, all the management were like, oh, that sounds great. And then she said, oh, it's in The Hague. And then there was just this wall of, oh. And I thought, when I go back, if it's in The Hague, I'm going. End of story. So I have to always say thank Ellen Mahoney, because it was just, that was when I heard about it. When I went to my first FIGT in The Hague, the wonderful Daniela Toma, she got in touch because she was kind of mentoring the presentation that I was doing. And she was fantastic. She was incredibly knowledgeable, helpful, professional. You name it, Daniela is it. And then I met Ruth kind of via Daniela. So with my process with FIGT, was all the people that I came to meet, I realized that firstly, I wasn't on my own, which, you know, cleaning my dark, moldy house felt very much like on my own. But then I met other people that had gone through it and come out the other end. And I always remember Tina Quick saying, I could live anywhere for 2 years. And it was just these things where I just thought, I'm not on my own. This is this part of the process. And it is still moving forward, even though it doesn't feel like it. And then even though now I'm living in a bigger house that doesn't have a mold problem, I'm the person doing all the stuff at home again. So I've kind of gone around again. But with FIGT, it really, really helped me. I did think that, do I try and find another job? What do I do? I don't want to let go of what I do and who I am, because the two for me are very closely linked. But in the UK, very often art is the first to go. It's generally one of those things where if I say I'm an art or therapist or art psychotherapist, people are either very interested or kind of pull this face going, art? Oh, you make baskets. It's like, no, I'm not that type of therapist. But here, what I'm finding is that over time, where I could see and connect with other people like me, when there were none where I lived, where I lived in Devon, very, very few, everyone stayed there. That was very, very helpful, because it was just all of a sudden I was on a big island full of people rather than on a little rock by myself. If that makes sense.
Absolutely. So this, with this, I wanted to ask you to highlight the importance of keep building bridges and work in networking and find opportunities or groups, specific groups to co-create, co-work, and other type of collaboration can happen, not just being fixed on or focus on one type of work. That was another aspect very important to remind the people who are thinking to reinvent, that maybe they don't know where to start, but starting with networking or maybe attending a conference of something they are passionate, it can lead to really good partnership or collaboration. That was the case for me as well, FIGT, during my last reinvention, I would say. In the end, I was following my husband's work and supporting our family. And I had to reinvent several times. But the last one was when I really find my way and I I thought it was important to be able to support other families and other spouses, just as just like me and my family, living abroad and having to adapt in different contexts and start over. For me, it was starting over a job nearly at every move. It wasn't so easy. But when I decided to retrain, I really wanted to have all the tools and the skills. So that's why I became a life coach and a cross-culture trainer. And I had to attend FIGT to meet all the people and the professional who were working in that field. And the sensation when I was there is, well, I couldn't stop myself from being in out and amazed and surprised. And I felt a lot of joy, sense of belonging, many, many things all together. And I felt also empowered of, yes, I can do this. Yes, there's a space for me. There's a lot of work to do. There are a lot of family that I can help. So it's really important to not stay on our own and connect to other people and build partnership as well.
And also, you made a really good point, is, you know, as time develops, and if you do have children, what you need to do for them, it actually gets less. I mean, you do suddenly realize that you can look back and, you know, you have the tools from working with these ages, but then you also have more space for yourself. And I think when your children are tiny, it feels like they will be like that forever. And then you blink and they're teenagers. And this is where I'm just thinking, you know, my daughter came home from school here and she said, I'm the only British person at my school. So which accent do I choose? And I said, it's up to you. I really don't mind. I said, you can be Canadian accent outside. I said, or you can be British accent at home. But what I noticed was that she had a very international school mid-Atlantic accent in Malaysia because she was so small. She just picked it up. And within a couple of weeks, her accent had completely changed. Now she's 13. It has stayed constant. With my son, he's like, oh, whatever, you know, he's a bit older, he's just like shrugs his shoulders, I'm not really interested. But he's the only British person at his school as well. So I think what they're finding is that each time round brings something new and something different. But then if you've got the skills, you can build on them each time you go round. It's like something that spirals up. And what I find is, if I am struggling, if I'm having a bad day, if I want to go home, which we all have those days, also with the impact of COVID and everything else, just, you know, that just keeps going round and round in circles. All of that is where I put my creative head on, because do I want it in here or swinging around in my head, or do I want to put it down somewhere so that it's out? And that is part of my process, because if I'm here on my own, then I can still continue to do that. I don't need someone else to go through that process with me. If I'm working with somebody, which I have in the past, where they don't feel anyone will ever understand them, it's when you see that light come on that they realize that they're empowering themselves. And that's what I really love about what I do. It's not about me telling somebody and giving myself a big thumbs up. It's watching them see what they can do for themselves.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So very important. And it brings me to ask you maybe one last question.
Of course.
What would be your advice to the listener of this podcast and who are embarking on thinking to change their career, their life, whatever, to reinvent themselves?
Yes, it's scary. I will definitely say that. But what I always think of in my mind is when I'm having those scary moments is, you have those big balls of different coloured string all made up like a ball, and they're all different coloured strings with all the bits coming out. You look at it and they make me just feel like I have to put it away. It's too much visual stimulation for me. But it's looking at the threads you have. So what threads do you have? Are there five big threads? that really, so for me, being creative, using art, being an illustrator, wanting to help people, they are my big threads. Mm-hmm. So what are those big threads that you can actually look at and take with you when you go on the next step? So I trained to be an English language, second language teacher. And in my mid-20s, I was teaching English as a second language. I realized I did not want to be a teacher. My parents are like, oh, something else you don't want to do. And I'm saying, but finding out what you don't want is as important as what you do. It's like trying on shoes. You know, they might look great and you walk around and you go, oh, I can't wear these. They're too painful, or that I just don't like them. Then you find the ones you want by process of elimination. And that is not getting too caught up in how many things you can explore. It's about looking at what you have in more depth. So teaching was not for me, but it taught me how to be organized like a teacher. So I have organized brain. It helped me learn that skill. But it was realizing that actually when I'm asking people to draw a family tree and tell me about their lives in an English class, that maybe I'm not really meant to be an English teacher. So it's just about separating those strands and then looking at what they can give you. I find if I start looking too far ahead, so if I start looking too far of where am I going to end up with this, I find that makes me extremely anxious. So I would be looking at, you know, the next couple of months, where might this lead me? But what you usually find is, and I think it was the lovely Ruth Van Rieken who once said, if you just reach the right person, that's all you need. And I think that was a very, very wise statement in that, you know, how many people can I reach? You reach that right person and that is all you need. And I would strongly, strongly support the conversations that came up by chance, or did they? And always I find that I have interesting conversations in elevators, especially at conferences. So I would say elevators at conferences, while queuing for food, that's another good one. But just generally these people where all of a sudden you find somebody that has that connection or knows what you're talking about and then can offer advice or another connection is how I go forward. And that's where I am again right now in Canada, looking at, you know, what strings do I have and where might they lead me and how can I weave them together? And that's where I am right at this current point again.
Fine. Brilliant. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Lots of takeaway, a lot of learning. I really love to hear your story, Shelley. Thank you so much for your time and sharing with us. You will find, for the listeners, you will find all the information about Shelley in the show notes. But just to mention here, her website is shelleyboroughs.com, and you can find the beautiful drawings. And she's sharing one post a day on her Instagram account, all her adventure, life adventure, the account Creative Global Connections. I follow her. Every day. It's amazing.
And I speak to people and they say, no, I know already. I saw it in your post-it. So that is just my post-it. So people's getting in touch saying, what have I done today? And you knew about the boxes because of my post-it. So I'm unpacking shipping.
It's a public diary. Therapeutic diary on Instagram.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shelley.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Now I want to hear from you. What's your number one takeaway from my conversation with my guest? We would love to hear your comments. You'll find all the links in the show notes. If you're curious about reinvention, go download my free guide, Your First Steps. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you'll never miss the opportunity to spark curiosity and get inspired on how you can navigate change in your own life.